What's up, guys? Rick here with your preview for this week's Arnold Palmer Invitational. Clearly, if you're watching the video version of this show, I'm not at home. I'm on the road, so hopefully the sound and the quality of everything is still okay. If you are wondering, like, what do you mean just watching it? Yeah, all of these are ripped to podcasts. Every single episode, anywhere you can get podcasts, there's always links in the description. I never really talk about it. That's on me. Search 300 Yards to Unknown, search Rick Run Good, and you'll be able to find it if you are much more of an audio person. Okay, we've got the signature event this week. We are going to also have the Puerto Rico Open. There's also like five other events in the world of golf, so there's just a ton going on this week. We're going to spend a lot of time on the live chat on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, Rick Run Good YouTube channel covering all of that. For right now, let's dive deeper into this field, this golf course, and everything we need to know for the API. Okay, here's the course key stats page on rickrungood.com. This is my website. Basically, everything you see from here on out will be from my website, Rick Run Good. We've got the golfer profiles, the Holy Grail, cheat sheet, all that fun stuff. You'll see it all here. Bay Hill, some of the stickiest course history because we've played it every year for decades. It is, in theory, a challenging course, although we did say that about PGA National, although we did have an idea that PGA National was going to play a little bit easier in 2024 than it had in previous years. And if you look at the key stats for this week, correlated stats, the big boys, strokes gained approach is going to knock your socks off, right? It's ninth, which means there's only eight other courses in which strokes gained approach is more important than here at Bay Hill. The fact that you get a week where strokes gained approach ranks highly is noteworthy because it always values highly, which are two different things. And then if you look at all of the course key or all of the correlated stats, even those that are not super sticky, even those that are pretty wonky, what do you see? Strokes gained approach, approaches from 50 to 175, club head speed, approaches from over 200, approaches from 225 to 250, approaches from 250 to 275, driving distance, par five scoring, boom. That was like the first eight or nine that are either all approach or power metrics, right? Distance off the tee, club head speed, the idea of being able to correlate club head speed to success at Bay Hill is from thick rough, right? You're not only hitting long shots into greens, but if you're playing out of thick rough, those shots become more difficult and you're not going to get the similar level of run out. Those shots are going to be even longer. So it makes sense. So we're looking for distance off the tee. We're looking for great approach play. And of course, we'll throw course history in the mix as well. When you do those metrics over the last 36 rounds for everybody in this field, Adam Scott gets the biggest boost. We'll talk a lot about Adam Scott. He is trending in the right direction. His metrics look great. I actually think if you want to go and fire an Adam Scott Masters bet right now, I'd have to look up what the odds are, but I was looking a couple weeks ago and they were pretty long. I think now is probably the time. Because if he gets hot, if he wins this, if he continues to play well at the Players, I don't know what numbers you're going to see on Adam Scott. Victor Hovland is second. He's had success here. Don't confuse course fit and course history. They do not matter on this adjusted fit calculation. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, and then speaking of guys with no course history but just a great course fit, Ludvig Åberg, $9,500, gets about a stroke per round of adjustment based on the stats that we've seen from him over the last 36. Lots of penalties here for missing the fairway. Lots of rewards for driving it long. So this is every par four and every par five on the course broken down by how often those fairways are hit, what the average drives are, and then you'll see significant penalties. Basically a third to a half shot penalty on every hole that you miss the fairway on. That is sizable. And then if you do hit what is what I call a long drive, which is a drive that's just longer than average on that hole, the reward goes up on every hole, and then you get four or five holes that like are a quarter of a stroke or a third of a stroke more. So again, this is you're looking at all the data. You wouldn't have to see Bay Hill at all. You could look at all the data and you could say, okay, this is clearly going to benefit somebody who can hit it far, can keep it in play, can keep it in the fairway, and then can hit their long irons well, can hit their approach as well. And then if you look at the golf course, you'd also look at the rough, you'd look at the fairway, you'd look at the yardages, and you'd say, this is a golf course that rewards distance. This is a golf course that is going to reward those that can hit their long irons really well. So no surprise there. When you do look at the approach buckets, what do you see? You know, those bottom three, 150, 175, 175 to 200, 200 and plus, that's where the majority of these approach shots are coming from. This is not a wedge fest. It's never been a wedge fest. And then you can, if you want to tap it off with a little bit of the putting boost, you'll see that you get a larger percentage of birdie opportunities, whether they are made or not, from 16 to 26 feet, which is higher than tour average. 27 to 36 feet, also higher than tour average. We're lower than tour average on shorter putts. What does that say? The way to interpret that is because we're hitting longer irons in, you are not getting as close. You're not getting guys who are throwing a bunch of darts like other PGA Tour courses. It's not going to be a wedge fest. So not everybody's hitting it to 15 feet regularly. You're getting a lot more approaches that are settling farther away from the hole locations. And that's where those birdie opportunities are coming. So you take the frequency in which you think that is going to happen, how good each golfer is from those putting ranges, and you can give a putting boost to specific golfers. And the top four here are Xander Schauffele, Eric Cole, Tommy Fleetwood, Max Homa. I left out Matthew Pavone. He's fifth. He does have a much smaller sample size than everybody else because we're now just starting to get a lot more hole-by-hole data for Pavone as he has been playing here on the PGA Tour the last couple of weeks. And then Sam Burns is the fifth guy that gets that putting boost who has a significant enough sample size. The cheat sheet here, and you'll see, I mean, this is a full week. We've got two events on the PGA Tour, a European Tour event, a Korn Ferry Tour event, a LIV Golf event, a Senior Tour event. That's six events. All of them supported on Rick Run Good. You've got the two Puerto Rico Open and the Arnold Palmer Invitational underneath PGA. I'll obviously, as of me recording this, the Puerto Rico Open salaries are not out yet. So when that happens, I will plug all of those in. But we'll work with API for right now. And three golfers over $10,000. Scottie Scheffler is 11.3. Rory McIlroy is 10.6. Patrick Cantlay is $10,000. I don't think I have anything super noteworthy or super interesting or super different to say about Scottie Scheffler. Anytime that there is an emphasis on tee to green play, anytime that there is a reward for being long and accurate off the tee, he is going to get a really good boost. You know, he finished T10 at Riviera, losing four strokes putting. It's ugly stuff on the putting surfaces. It truly is. I do want to pull up his Arnold Palmer Invitational, because I know he's putted well here at least. Yeah, when he won this in 2022, he gained 4.2 strokes putting. He was a zero last year. Actually, he's closer to a minus one last year, and he finished T4. Back in 2020, was the third time he played it. He lost nearly five strokes putting and finished T15. So the baseline, especially now in a even smaller field than normal, this baseline for Scottie is incredibly high. This is one of those, it's a signature event with a cut, right? So it's similar to what we saw at the at Riviera after the Genesis Invitational. It's this event, Riviera, and also Jack's tournament, the Memorial, which are going to run this top 50 and ties plus anybody within 10 shots of the cut as the cut line. So it's very likely that Scottie Scheffler makes the cut. And if you get him four almost guaranteed rounds, he's likely to have a lot of success and finish inside the top 10. And if he putts to a plus one, he probably wins the golf tournament. I don't think I have all that much to say about Scottie. What I'm more interested in finding out is what the industry does with these three. Rory McIlroy is like that dude at Bay Hill, right? So if you haven't seen it yet, on the Holy Grail, I added a new tab just to make this easy for one and dones and research and everything else, called Course Horses. And you can go through this and you can load any field, any number of years, any golfer, or any course. So if you just want to see Rory McIlroy across all the courses, you could just load that. If you want to see this week, for example, Bay Hill, you could do that. And golfers who have a large enough sample size. So Rory's got a 36 round sample size at Bay Hill. He's gaining 2.36 strokes per round. It is a monster number to do it, especially in that many rounds. Scottie Scheffler is better. He's only done it in 12 rounds. Jordan Spieth is better, 8 rounds. Kurt Kitayama better, 4 rounds. Okay, so you're talking about 3 times as many rounds for Rory as Scottie, and still putting up an elite level of play. If you get rid of Bay Hill in general and just do Rory McIlroy and look at where he has had his best success of any place where he's played, let's call it 30 times. So Quail Hollow, he's crushed 2.6 strokes per round over 42 rounds. You've got Sheshan International. That's an event that doesn't even exist anymore. That's the old WGC HSBC, 2.46 over 32. And then it's Bay Hill. So you're talking about an elite golfer getting one of the best spots for him, and actually a top 2 spot, especially if places that are currently on the schedule where you could roll him out. So I imagine you're going to get a lot of Rory one and done. I think that's fair. You're going to get Rory. Well, I don't know. We're going to see that's kind of what started this conversation is, what are we going to do with Cantlay? What are we going to do with Scottie? And what are we going to do with Rory? And where does the ownership start breaking down? Rory's last 3 have not been good by McIlroy standards. Driving it, unbelievable. You know, don't get lost in the fact that over Riviera and the Cognizant, he gained over 11 strokes off the tee. The sentiment around Rory was that he did not hit his approaches very well at the Cognizant. That is not particularly true. He gained 2 strokes on approach, and he gained round 2, round 3, round 4. So I think that is, I saw that a lot. I heard it on the broadcast a couple times. Sure, maybe when they were showing him, he had a subpar shot or two, but that is not what the data says over the course of 72 holes. Where he really struggled was the putter, at a specifically on the weekend. Lost 4 strokes putting there on the weekend. Now going to a golf course where, you know, I'm going to assume, and I don't have to assume, we're going to pull it up, that he's got a lot of great putting numbers, and he does. You know, he has never lost more than 1.2 strokes putting over 4 rounds at Bay Hill, routinely gaining with the putter, bunch of top 10s, the victory in 18, all that fun stuff. So I'll be interested to see if people would rather go with Scottie, who's coming off some better finishes and has great history, or Rory, who's coming off some subpar finishes, who has elite history. I'm happy to go to Rory here. And it might leave Cantlay as the odd man out of this conversation. And what I saw from him at Riviera, outside of, you know, a pretty sour weekend, the first 2 rounds at a world-class golf course were, I think, nearly flawless. He was so good. He finished T11 at Pebble. If you want to pull up his Bay Hill stuff, oops, I almost clicked Pebble there. Arnold Palmer Invitational. He's only played here once. Played here last year, finished T4, gained as you would expect. You know, very good from tee to green, a little bit of a loser with the putter, no problems there. He is, when you can kind of guarantee him 4 rounds, when you can get him in some of these bigger, smaller field events, that's when Cantlay really starts to shine. And I'm wondering about the distribution of ownership and how that breaks out at the top. Because if Cantlay is going to come in at, you know, 14% or something like that, we'll just fire him up basically everywhere. Okay, so here's the 9K range. And, you know, sentiment around these golfers changes so, so quickly. And Victor Hovland, I think if this event was January 1st or even more recent than that, would have been one of the most popular golfers this week. You know, he had the runner-up finish in 2022. He finished 10th here last year. I don't think he's ever missed the cut. And now, I don't think he's going to be as popular. You know, 2024 has been okay for him. It hasn't started out very well. He doesn't have a top 15. His best finish was at Riviera T19. I will say this. When I spoke with him at Riviera, I got the sense that he was close, right? He obviously took some time off, was continuing to work through some things in his game. I thought he was close. The remarks that he said to me, I thought were very positive, and he was getting excited about where his game was going. And the stats kind of back that up, right? 1.6 strokes on approach over 4 days at Riviera, which snapped a streak of losing on approach. That's what I think is really important here, because that was a From Hero to Pebble Beach was very, very uncharacteristic for him to lose that many strokes on approach that frequently and in succession. So if we are starting to get the trend going up and to the right here on Victor, that would make a lot of sense. And I think this is an opportunity to kind of, I don't want to say be early, because I don't think he's going to be like 6% owned. I think people are going to still enjoy playing Victor this week and using him in one and done scenarios. But I think that this is a pretty good spot to nab him when you have Xander Schauffele, Ludvig Åberg, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas in this range, right? That the bottom of this 9K range and even into the top of the 8K range, I believe is criminally underpriced. We'll talk about that in a second. But there's just so many good options here. You know, Spieth's DQ last week at Riviera does not tell the whole story, obviously. You know, he was in T20 going into the weekend. If he moves up and finish it, you know, let's say just finishes top 10. I mean, we're foaming at the mouth to get Jordan Spieth here. So what I really like to do is go look at some of the more recent, let's do the power rankings here. Last 12 rounds for everybody in this field. I don't know what this is going to show for Jordan Spieth. I imagine it's going to show pretty well. Let's let this load here. Spieth is, okay, he is 16th. He's gaining 1.28 strokes per round over those last 12 rounds. So again, that does go back. You know, he gets a knock by seeing a DQ next to his name. So if you're only looking at finishes, you're not getting the whole story. And then this does take into account the fact that he was playing well when he did get DQ'd. I'm certainly going to have my fair share of Ludvig, because this seems like one of the best courses for him, and he's even found success on golf courses that are not good for him. But the bottom of this range, specifically Homa, I could even be convinced of Colin Morikawa, but Justin Thomas, and then even into the 8K range for Will Zalatoris, that is where I'm hoping to get a lot of ownership. This is a pretty sticky course when it comes to course history. You see a lot of guys who have good starts year over year, and we talk a lot about the guys like Rory. We talk a lot about the guys like Spieth and Victor and Scottie Scheffler, and not as much conversation around what Max Homa has done in his four trips. Never finished worse than 24th, has a 24th, 10th, 17th, 14th. That's 4 years in a row. In the last two, he lost, what is that, four strokes putting and gained 18 strokes ball striking. And now you look at what he's been up to recently. And besides the blemish in Phoenix, which, you know, I think I don't care a lot about what you did at Pebble, what you did at Phoenix this year, just with the way that everything shook out. He gets back on track and finishes T16 at Riviera. And we're putting together a profile of, you know, Riviera, Torrey Pines, a couple golf courses, you know, obviously very different. But ask you to hit a lot of long irons. This is a golf course that asks you to hit a lot of long irons. Max Homa has just like that second tier course history that I think people are going to overlook because they're able to go get elite course history. I want to pull up Morikawa's profile here really quickly, because he has been a little bit of an enigma. It just seems that we can't get four really good rounds out of him. You know, we got a great Sunday at Riv, but you know, Friday and Saturday kind of played himself out of it. And Pebble Beach was fine. Maybe one more round, he moves up into the top 10, misses the cut at Farmers. That was pretty ugly. But before that, he was on a roll. So what I really want to do is I want to look at some of his metrics here. You know, he's pretty decent from the longer, you know, he does not really, whether it's a wedge, a short iron, a mid iron, a long iron, he is one of the best players in the world. He keeps the ball in play. He's going to find a lot of fairways this week. The problem is, so the path for him is a bit more narrow, because if he does start whiffing, if he does start missing fairways, he's going to be in a lot of trouble. Doesn't possess the clubhead speed, doesn't possess the power. He would put himself behind the eight ball. But I like the way that there is obviously a very clear path for him to the top of the board. And that's and I think that some guys like Rory McIlroy, like Scottie Scheffler, they've got like nine different ways to get to the top of the board, right? If I drive it well, great. If I don't, I'll be an elite approach player. If I don't hit a lot of greens, I've got one of the best short games in the world, speaking about Scotty specifically. The Morikawa fewer paths to victory, I think, is then illustrated in his finishes. T64, T9, missed cut. It's kind of all over the place because you're asking an exact situation to happen, or at least a closer to an exact situation for him to happen. If something goes wrong, it's not as easy for him to rebound. So I think he's a bit more volatile and a bit more risky. But if you're looking for that, that is available to you. And then finally, Justin Thomas, before we get to Will Zalatoris in the 8K range, coming off the missed cut at Riv, horrible, ugly, everything went wrong. I'm not even going to opine whether it was playing with Tiger, I don't know. I have no idea. But what I do know is he did not look anything like himself. This was the first time he lost strokes on approach since the Wyndham. And we know since the Wyndham Championship, he's been phenomenal. First time he lost from tee to green since then. I mean, if I exclude the Ryder Cup as well, which is obviously wonky strokes gain data, but it does exist. I mean, this is just... To me, that looks like an outlier. I'm willing to be convinced that he is the golfer that we saw for basically 8 straight events, and not the one that we saw for the last one, which might have been a little bit of a circus, might have just been a couple of days for him. But man, it was truly horrendous. I want to see what his putting numbers at Bay Hill are historically, and just see if there's anything to write home about. So he played in 15, which we don't really care about this result, good or bad. He finished T49, lost 3 strokes putting, gained 5 ball striking, gained 6 ball striking last year. Great sign there. And was a small negative with the putter. Okay. I can live with all of that. Hoping that people don't opt for JT at the bottom of this board. As we get into the 8K range, couple of quick items. The 2 contests that are running on Splash right now will be linked into the description. We've got the Guaranteed Tiers contest, which is $20 entry. You pick 1 golfer from each of 6 tiers, and all that money is guaranteed. The guys at Splash have been very, very good about that. And then for the first time ever, we're doing the Players and Majors 3 and done. So 5 events. You're going to end up picking 3 golfers a week. So that's 15 golfers in total. It is $500. Which I have talked about getting a smaller buy-in. I don't know if that's going to happen, but this is what we thought was a good entry point. So if we fill this thing, 460 people, first place is going to be $25,000. Second place is going to be 20. It's a very flat payout structure, which is what I wanted. 50 people out of 464 will be paid. And then also there are segments. Each tournament in its own right is a segment. So first, second, and third for just the players and just each one of the 4 majors will also be paid, even if you don't finish in the overall payouts. This is legal, fully regulated, all that stuff in, I believe it's 40 states plus DC. So go click the link in the description, see if your state fits. And I think we're going to get a real strong push here over the next couple weeks, because this is going to start next week at the Players Championship. If you want to know about my rankings, those are up rickrungood.com/bestball, completely free. You can go check those out, who's in what major championships, what their stats look like, all that fun stuff. Everything will be linked in the description as well. The 8K range, I think, has a ton of value in it. You know, I've been very bullish on Will Zalatoris, not only in season-long best ball, in weekly contests. I've been betting him quite a bit. This is it. This is him being back, right? I couldn't believe he didn't win at Riv, right? I just thought it looked so good coming in. He was playing so well. He ended up finishing T2. I'm obviously not going to be upset about that, but look at this profile. So Farmers, T13, where he gains across the board. Riviera, T2, which he gains across the board. Both of those courses ask you to hit a lot of long irons. Will Zalatoris separates himself with his ball striking, with his tee to green play, with like all of that stuff. This is such a good spot for him. And maybe I'll have to do this in my newsletter this week, rickrungood.com/newsletter. Like I want to just pull who are the best players when, you know, 25% of the approach shots come from over 200 yards, something like that. And I would imagine Zalatoris is on that short list. Because you think about he's had multiple years of success at Torrey. He's had multiple years of success at Riviera. I think he's I think he's about set for making a really good run at this one. And then I'm almost ready to declare it. I think Cam Young might be back, right? You know, this was an extended drought, or I don't want to call it a drought, a slump. Basically his entire sophomore year, wins rookie of the year, doesn't play well in 2023. Look at what we're getting now. And this goes back to Dubai. So if rickrungood.com, again, six tours. I've got the strokes game metrics from the European tour. I've got the live data loaded in. So when you're getting ready for your major championship stuff, got those guys, all good. This goes back to Dubai when he should have won in January. And then even in weeks where he has struggled, the 78th at Pebble drives it so well. Then he starts to figure it out at Phoenix, T8, T16 at Riv, T4 last year. This is him putting it all together. And then, of course, you look at what he has done at this event, which should be one of the better course fits for him. He's played it twice each of the last 2 years, 10th and 13th. This is, I think, criminally underpriced for Cam Young. Really, really good profile, good course fit, good course history, good recent form. Even some other guys in this range that could take ownership from him, like Matt Fitzpatrick, who's been nutty good here. Like this is, I just think this is a Cam Young smash spot, as they would say. There's a mild level of interest on Wyndham Clark. He is fairly volatile. When he plays his best, this could be a good spot for him. Hits it a mile, great in clubhead speed, can get really hot, can win big time events with deep fields. I am cautious there because he is, you know, just as likely to miss the cut as he is to play well. And we've seen that with a really bad run at Riviera. He didn't play particularly well in Phoenix. I think that this is a little bit of a hope and a prayer, but if you're going to hope and a prayer on guy in the 8K range, I think you could do much worse than that. The 7K range, and by the way, we are back to the standard pricing, which is just stops you at 6K here. I am loving Matthew Pavone. Okay, so he was in the mix again in Florida last week at the Cognizant. Ended up finishing T8. I cannot remember. I'll have to go look. Did he finish his final round on Monday? I want to say he did, but don't quote me on that. So he is plays great at the Farmers, wins that. Plays great at Pebble Beach, finishes third. Plays great at this event until the suspensions, until, you know, things get wacky, right? He was a zero on Saturday or in round three, and then he lost a stroke and a half or 1.2 on Sunday. So when things got out of whack, out of schedule, that's when he struggled. Am I going to kill him for that? I don't know. Probably not. But now you still have a golfer who has played five times on the PGA Tour this year in 2024. Three of them are top sevens, and he was in the top 10 with I don't know how many holes to go at the Cognizant. That's just his PGA Tour stuff. You go back five or six more starts on the European Tour, you find another win, you find four more top 15s. Like, we have to start taking him seriously at some point, don't we? I think we do. And that point feels like right now. Jake Knapp proved me wrong last week, right? Mexico was a perfect spot for him. He won. I did not think the PGA National was a great spot for him. He finished T4. I was impressed with his ability to keep the golf course in front of him, gear down when required. He still putted beautifully. I mean, his stat profile from Honda, oh, I just did it, PGA National was nearly identical to what he did in Mexico. He flushed it a little bit more in Mexico, but he gained 7.3 strokes ball striking last week. That's an insane number. So now he goes to a golf course that should be better for him, should feel a lot like Pebble or Torrey to him. Long shots in, clubhead speed, thick rough. Let's go. T3 there, by the way. So I got him wrong last week. I think this is time to get back on. I want to deep dive into Adam Scott. I mentioned maybe firing a master's future on him here. And if you go to the power rankings and look at just the last 36 rounds for every golfer in this field, minimum of 24 rounds, Minwoo Lee, so this is across all tours. So there's some bumps being made here for Minwoo and other guys as well. But Minwoo Lee is number one. Adam Scott is number two. He's gaining 1.88 strokes per round. Saw him at Riv, place he always plays well, and did so again, T19. Phoenix T8, Pebble T20. Three straight top seven finishes on the European Tour. He's playing the best golf that he has played in a pretty long time. He's played at this event a ton. It's been a little bit of a mixed bag. Best finish was 2014. He finished third. He's got a top 12, a top 15 finish in 2016. Made the cut each of the last 2 years. It hasn't always been great. The thing that he always does well is he drives it well. Now, his approach play has struggled each of the last 4 years. Well, guess what? He has cleaned that up significantly because he has not lost a stroke or more on approach since LACC when he missed the cut at the US Open last year. So... the thing that he has struggled with at Bay Hill in recent years is not an issue right now. I just think this is such a darn good spot for him. Let's do our quick Ricky Fowler check-in because I did get a lot of questions on him in the live chat last week. Specifically like, hey, is pick on Rick over? Are we done with that? No, I don't think we are. You know, T35 at Riv. The putter, I'll give him credit. This is a good sign. After hemorrhaging with the putter, which is really bad to see for Ricky since his win, he's gained 5 strokes putting in his last 2 starts. Good sign. So I do not think it is a total disaster anymore. I just think it's like a medium disaster. And I want to see the rest of his game start to come back. History around here, nothing to write home about. A lot of T18 to T52 finishes, nothing super special. If he was going to check in at, I don't know, 7%, I'd be interested. But outside of that, it is still pick on Rick time. Okay, the 6K range. So the late adds to this field. So Austin Eckroat with the win at the Cognizant, he is in. I believe the other late guys were EVR, Eric Van Rooyen, and Minwoo Lee, both off of runner-up finishes, got them into this event. Minwoo might have already been in it. I don't remember. But they're pretty decent options. So a couple of things here. Minwoo has historically played well on difficult golf courses and big time fields, big time events. He has struggled here, missed the cut each of his last 2 years. I don't think I particularly care about that. Eric Van Rooyen is a little interesting, and I think I'm starting to become a believer a little bit here. Since the win in Mexico, what was that, Mayakoba, at the end of last year, right? Yeah. So we're seeing a really profound improvement in both ball striking and putting, which, by the way, you put those together and you get a bunch of top 25 finishes and top 10s, which is exactly what he's done. T8 in Mexico at the Mexico Open, 2 starts ago, runner-up finish last week, in at Honda, and now he goes to Bay Hill. So we've got, you know, it's really hard to argue this profile. It looks nothing like what he did in 2023. He's clearly found something. He's clearly found a lot of improvement. So I don't even really care about what he's done at this event because I think that this is a different type of golfer, but I'll pull it up anyway. Played here in 2022, missed the cut. Played here in 2021, T57. Nope, I don't think anybody cares about either one of those. But we again have to start taking EVR seriously at $6,600, especially around some of these other guys that are just kind of playing to their base. Like I bet if I go in here, yeah. So last 36 rounds in the trends tool, Eric Van Rooyen is playing a stroke over his 100 round baseline. That's a massive number. Stroke over his 100 round baseline. It takes him from a pretty significant losing player to a plus 0.2. That's a significant improvement. It's why you're seeing some of the success roll in here. If you go to the breakout candidates, yeah, loves Austin Eckroat, loves Adam Svensson, loves Justin Lauer, loves Minwoo Lee. Loves Al Torres as well. You want to be in that upper left-hand quadrant, which would be really good. You don't want to be in that bottom right-hand quadrant. Oh, it hates Cam Davis. It hates Matthew Pavone, honestly. It hates Eric Cole. Man, Eric Cole burned a lot of people last week. Let's see what else we've got here. Okay, I think that's the most exciting stuff in the 6K. Let's run a model and see what we can find. So here's the custom model, rickrungood.com. All right, what do we want to do? Before I forget, let's do Bay Hill course history. Very, very sticky. We're going to put 15 on it. We are going to do, we want distance, right? So we're going to put 15 on distance. We want, actually, let's do a weighted strokes gain baseline, by the way. Do we need to do weighted strokes gain? Because these are guys that mostly play, yeah, let's do weighted strokes gained. So we'll just put 10 on a weighted strokes gain total, baseline last 36 rounds. Okay. So, now I want strokes gained approach last 36 for something big, right? 25. We'll do 20 and then I'll do some of the buckets. I want approach buckets. We'll do 175 to 200 and 200 to 225 for 8 each. So we have 24 left. So we have our distance, we have our approach, we have our baseline, we have our course history. You know, in theory, this should classify as a long and difficult golf course. In theory, right? You know, we thought last week was going to be hard as well. Let's do 5 on each one of those. We've got 14 left. We've done nothing on putting. Could do bonus putting. I do love bonus putting. We've got nothing around the green. We've got nothing on our strokes gain distribution. We've got nothing on fantasy scoring or implied odds or anything like that. Let's do 6 on bogey avoidance, and then let's do 4 and 4 on hot, like high upside golfers. So plus how often they gain 4 or more strokes, how often they gain 5 or more strokes. My number one golfer, to probably the surprise of no one, is Scottie Scheffler. Victor is 2, Ludwig is 3, Colin is 4. That's a coup right there, right? You've got 3 guys in the 9K ranking 2, 3, and 4 before you get back to a guy in the 10K range, which is Patrick Cantlay. I'll zoom in and see if you guys can see this a little bit better. I'm on my laptop, so it's kind of weird. 6th is Cam Young, $8,700 ranked 6th for me. Xander is 7, JT is 8, ahead of Rory at 9. Then look at this. Adam Scott, 10, Will Zalatoris, 11, Jordan Spieth, 12. So that's $7,500, $8,900, $9,400. Grillo gets a big jump here. 15th at $6,900. Justin Rose, $6,800, 17. Those are big jumps. Guys that get knocks, Homa, all the way down to 26th at $9,200. Sam Burns, 30th at $9,300. That's tough. Sahith, $8,100, 33rd. Yikes. Russell Henley, 48th at 8,000. Wyndham Clark, 8,500 at 56th. Okay, interesting. Let me save this. So this will be 2024 Monday API, just in case we want to review this later. But we will continue this conversation along with Puerto Rico, lives in Hong Kong for the first time, European Tour event, Korn Ferry Tour event. I'll load in all the salaries as we get rocking and rolling. Do me a favor, hit the like button, make sure you're subscribed. It helps the channel in a big way. But that'll do it. Best of luck, guys. Talk to you soon.